Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
This is Kathy Smith, and I'm here today recording with Heather.
Kenny.
I'm sorry, I forgot that. We're going to talk about how she handled the pandemic. Heather is employed with the R7 School District. Today is 7/9/2021. Thank you very much, Heather, for agreeing to visit with me today.
Sure.
So if you could tell me a little bit about yourself.
Oh, I am a resident of Lee Summit, and I've been employed with the Lee Summit R7 School District for about 16 or 17 years, and I served as a principal of Summit Point Elementary for the last 14 years. This school year, I'm the assistant superintendent of elementary education here at the district office. But during the pandemic, I was a building principal.
Okay. So have you lived it was a crazy time, I know that. I mean, everything crashed like the first day in terms of the internet and all that. So tell me how you dealt with all of that stuff, kind of a step-by-step. Was it like, yikes, what are we going to do next? Coming up with platforms for kids to use, mm-hmm. Those that had access to internet, those that didn't, and what you did about all of that stuff.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of go back a little bit.
Okay.
So the pandemic really started for us in March of 2020, and we had school just like a regular day, and you kind of heard a little bit about the coronavirus and it was coming, and people really didn't know what it was, probably just like you at home, didn't really know what it was. And so I remember that we were at school that day and people started saying, "They're like, we can't have, like, this stuff travels. It, kids get it and it's going to, people are going to get it and it's going to be spread." And just kind of in awe, just didn't understand it. And while we kind of talked to teachers that day and were like, there's this virus and people are talking about it. And I don't know how to describe it. Everyone's kind of talking about it. And so we sent kids home for the day. That was like a Friday. And we had spring break the following week. And so kids went home. People sent supplies because we really weren't sure what was going to happen after spring break. So teachers were sending like pieces of paper home that we laminated. They were sending home supply boxes and crayons and binders and notebooks and stuff because we just didn't have any idea what was going to happen. And so, it just felt so different than what we're used to. So kids went home. We had spring break. And I think, I don't remember the exact date, but one of the days over spring break or right before, the governor decided that schools were going to close. And so over spring break, many, 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 many teachers spent the week trying to figure out what we were going to do. Like, how are they going to teach these kids and their class? And it's just so different than what we've done before. So teachers really spent a lot of time over spring break. Airports were closed down and people were, stuck at home. And so teachers just spent a million hours all that week trying to find ways that we had a platform called Schoology and how they would have this course. And some teachers had kind of had a course set up and they used it, a little bit. But when you see kids every day, you don't rely on things like that. You rely on that human interaction. And so the kids, so the teachers made these huge courses and they could find reading and math and science and social studies. And then we developed a schedule and we just kind of pushed it out. So we just kind of, I made a video to parents and I said, here's what we're thinking. We're going to have kids work kind of half day because we don't know what their stamina is to be able to sit on a computer. They're going to do live meetings. They're going to have work. They're going to have, all these things that we'd hoped for. And so the first day came and, the world was shut down. And so the Schoology platform just wasn't able to be stable. So kids were on, kids were off. We were trying to do live meetings with kids. Lots of things happened, but there were some spots where things weren't able to happen. Teachers were logging on with kids for small group meetings, for whole group meetings. They were eating lunch together because, like I said, everyone's stuck at home. So teachers would say, log back on at noon and let's have lunch together. And kids would eat lunches. We were learning lots about what the environment was like because teachers were at home. You heard dogs barking. You heard the doorbells. I mean, we were just learning how to kind of live in this online environment. And so teachers did amazing things. And we pretty much did everything. We did some porch drop-offs. We did where kids would come to school and we would have items for them in bags because we really weren't allowed to be in the school either. And so teachers, we had this day they could come up and get supplies, so they could take them home and plan books and things and reading materials. And then we would have parents come to the building and pick up supplies and take them home. And then that all kind of died down a little bit at the beginning of May, because that's when the orders for Missouri and Jackson County were that you could, you know, start to get out and about wearing a mask and all those good things, but we didn't have the stay-at-home order. So once the stay-at-home order was lifted, we were able to do a few more things. We had a car parade where teachers all got in their cars and we went in our attendance area and drove past every single house, and kids lined the streets, and they waved and they had signs, and I get really emotional about that because that was the first we had seen them in almost a month and a half, 6 or 7 weeks. And when you're used to spending every day with kids and teachers and adults living in this school community, and then all of a sudden you don't have that, and then you see them, you know, they're so happy to see you and they're jumping up and down and they're screaming teachers' names and we're honking the horns, was really a great experience for everybody. So we kind of ended school just a few weeks later, and we were still doing the online school. We were trying our very best to provide enrichment activities for kids. Teachers were reading books online to kids. They were asking you if you had a printer and you could, they would have you print stuff out. We played games with kids. They would say things like, everyone go find something red. And then kids would scramble and they'd find something red and they'd come back to the computer and they'd say, I found a spoon, you know, or I found a kettle, or I found a blanket. And then the teacher would say, okay, go find something round. And then kids would run. Teachers played games where kids would have an item they had at home and they would give all these clues, and then, you know, all these kids in the class would guess and then they'd hold it up. Teachers did talent shows where kids showed their class something, whether it was they could jump rope or they could dance or they did a trick on their bike. But kids were logging on for these talent shows. We had teachers reading books. They would record lessons and push lessons out. They were doing spelling activities. A lot of teachers sent home a dry erase board. Kids were writing words on dry erase boards and flip them around. The teacher would look at them. Some of the most creative teaching happened. And while we still try to maintain connection with kids. So the end of the year came, and that was kind of hard. You know, typically a school year, you have closure and you get to hug your teacher goodbye. And that was probably the hardest thing about leaving the school year, is we didn't really have closure. We just kind of had this last day of school. Teachers put together videos where they each said, you know, I love you, and we had a great year. And then a teacher would put them all together and kids could watch them. Something we did in my building to kind of end that school year with kids is we led up to the end of the year, the last 4 or 5 days, and we did a little, trying to think of the name of the TV show, The Masked Singer. And so we had these masks on, you know, things you could find around your house, and we sang, and then you would pull it off and kids would vote who it was. But we tried to really recreate the end of the school year and celebrations and, you know, we care about you and we're all part of this community and we're all going through this. Teachers submitted videos about what they had been doing, like how have they kept busy during COVID. And then really, because we were free at the end of the year, lots of teachers made home visits. Teachers all over the district went to kids' houses and dropped off something or just to see them and have some closure. So that's kind of how we ended the school year. That summer, principals and teachers alike, you know, there was lots of information in the media that it was going to be different and that COVID wasn't going away and there weren't any kind of vaccines. And so we really started to realize, and probably right after school ended, about mid-June for me probably, that we may not be going back to school in person. And so again, people over in this building started looking at our curriculum. How do we shrink things? How do we pull out the most important things kids need to know? How do we set up environments for kids that are more stable? How do we, with the technology, how do we help them really learn? Because we're not sure how long we're going to be in this. So in August, the governor pushed back the start of school. He told everyone he thought we were going to be in a better place in September, and so we pushed back the school year. And then we knew pretty soon thereafter, in August, that we were going to invite our kindergartner through third graders to come back into the building and be in person. And at the same time, our older students, you know, I only teach little people, but our 4th through 12th graders would be learning at home. And because what we knew about the virus at that point was that it was obviously circulating among older people than small children. So we knew that we were going to have little kids, but we also knew that we had to really change the way that we were doing things. So for example, sitting in the cafeteria, how do we get enough distance between kids? They're going to have masks off, they're going to be eating. So we, in every building, every principal I know, brought teachers into the mix, and we just started coming up with plans. What do we need to do to get our buildings ready and our teachers ready and our kids ready to return? So we started kind of going through like a building transformation. Lots of people use tape in their hallways to kind of block, like, you're going this way. You know, kids know how to walk on the hallway, but you know, you walk on the right and this way you walk. And we had kind of that tape barrier so kids could see it. Some classrooms chose to eat in their classrooms, kind of like we did before cafeterias were a thing. Some teachers decided to try to spread the desks out as much as they could, which we all try to do that. But we really, you know, some people try to do it on the outskirts of their room. Some teachers took everything out of their room and just the desks. Lots of creative thinking. One of the biggest transformations to my own building was this idea of recess was kind of free play. But we really needed to be in a place where we could contact trace. And so we needed kids to be in one location from the same class on the playground.
Could you explain contact trace?
I sure can. So let me write that down. Let me finish my...
Okay.
I can tell you about contact tracing. So we really transformed our playground to develop like 4 zones. So if you were in class A, you would play in zone 1. If you were in class B, you'd play in zone 2. If you were in class 3, you'd play in zone 3 or class C. And so the kids would go out there, that way they wouldn't have contact with one another. And so really we formed kind of these classroom bubbles. Everybody in the classroom was kind of in your bubble. Other things that we had to implement, because we really needed kids to stay in school, because we knew that was important, is that we started into our schedules hand washing every time they were in and out of classrooms, hand sanitizing, just lots of structures. And not that we don't wash hands on a regular basis, but we were really doing a lot of hand washing. So we knew that had to happen for our K-3 kids. For our 4-6 kids, they were going to be at home. And what our teachers did was truly amazing. They created schedules for families and for kids that they were pretty much online all day. So if they would log on in the morning, they'd do a morning meeting just like they would in their classrooms. They would teach a math lesson because teachers came to school. They would teach math lessons in their class and their boards. Teachers became the most creative you've ever seen. Most of them had a TV monitor. most of them had their computer and then their smart board behind them. And they had this three-way technology contraption that they could see their whole class, themselves, and the kids could see what they were writing. And so we taught a lot of lessons that way. We taught science, kids did experiments, we taught social studies for months and months and months, really until about November. So really just months and months, how's that? So that kind of happened in November. In November, the numbers in Jackson County were very, very high. And now we know it was the highest month of the whole pandemic. And we were feeling that in schools. And what was happening was that we were starting to see either kids had positive cases or kids were considered, close contacts for a positive COVID case. And so what that led to was a lot of contact tracing. So what happened? We were doing it all year long. We had really started it in August. I would definitely say from both my peers and definitely myself, really where we saw the biggest contact tracing happening was probably October and November. So when we contact trace, let's say a adult or a kid were COVID positive, we would then take anybody who was in a 6-foot radius around them for 15 minutes or longer, and they would absolutely be coded. We'd make a list, handwritten list of, they were then considered a close contact, whether they were masked or not. And all of our students were wearing masks. That's probably something I should talk about too at some point, because having little kids wear masks is really a new adventure for us. And so we would contact trace anybody in their bubble. And you would just take that COVID positive person, whether it was a student or adult, and you would start at the very minute that they came to school, 2 days prior to them actually receiving the positive result. We'd have to go back 2 days. And so if the person became positive on Wednesday, we'd have to contact trace both Tuesday and Monday. So we would take the Monday at 8 a.m. or whenever they came to work or they started school, and we would literally go through their entire schedule all day long. And then we go to Tuesday and go through their schedule all day long. And sometimes it required us talking to people, finding out how close they were. We used rulers and measuring tape to make sure, if kids were too close or not too close. We had to look at bus videos and bus sitting charts to make sure that we, were excluding the right people and the right adults and kids. And in all the years I've been an educator, that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done. And not because of COVID, but because of COVID. Because as an educator, it is hard to look at someone who loves school and say to them, you can't come back to school for 14 days because we think you might be sick. And that is the hardest thing to tell somebody, whether you're telling their parent, whether you're telling an employee, or you're telling a child. It's just that it is hard. And that is very emotional because we want kids in school. So November was probably one of my hardest professional months as an educator ever. And then the numbers kept climbing, and it was just busy. A lot of educators were working on the weekends, trying to prepare stuff for kids. We were working a lot of nights, a lot of weekends, trying to make sure that if we had a positive on the weekend, that we were making sure that we did the exclusions so that kids wouldn't come to school who, needed to be excluded, or adults wouldn't come to school and need to be excluded. It just was really busy. So in November, like I said, now we will know that it was the highest month we ever had. All kids came back to school for a full week. And then the numbers just went off the charts. The percent positive in Jackson County. And so they came to school for a week. And at the end, I think it was like Thursday, they said, we have so many kids out and adults out. It is hard to run the schools. It's hard, we got to, for the safety of everybody. So we sent everybody home. That was hard again, because at that point, everyone was hoping and really just wanting to be in a place where we could bring our kids back safe and not have the year ended like it did the year before. So we sent kids home, and then it was decided by our school board in December that we would bring kids back full time in January. And so in January, K-6 came back every day. And again, we had to do things different. We ate in the classrooms. We didn't have banderstrings. We had PE, kids spread out. Excuse me, we took kids outside a lot. We tried to kind of just try to make things as normal as possible. And it was still different. It was still different. So we just tried to make the very best of it. Everything we did, you kind of had to have your COVID glasses on. So if you want to, if you want to do an activity, you had to put your COVID glasses on and think, okay, how can we do this activity? How do we do it different? So teachers were just coming up with the most creative ideas. Kids were just loving it. They were loving being back in the classrooms and with teachers and with their peers and playing together. And like I said, you just had to put your COVID glasses on. So, you know, we weren't taking field trips or anything. So teachers tried to think creative about how do we bring field trips into the building? Do we do virtual field trips? All these museums have places you can visit. And so we do that. How do we build a sense of community? How do we do activities where we're sharing supplies? You know, do we, everyone wash their hands? We share supplies and wash again. You know, how do we, one thing that we did in my building was, we learned the circular system for washing your hands. Everybody gets their hands wet, everyone gets soap, and then you walk in a circle washing your hands until you get back to the sink, and then you dry, and then you rinse, and then you dry, and then we just do this whole circle. So we just came up, teachers were just amazing. They came with the most creative ideas. And then, I'm trying to think what month it was. I think it was around May, maybe the end of April, a decision was made that we would no longer have to wear masks. And that social distancing in schools was still important, but we didn't have to manage 6 feet. So we really were able to finish the year in a really different place. Schools hosted field dates like we had had field day before. We put them all in the field. Kids did activities and engaged in PE and exercise and fun. We found ways to celebrate. We didn't have, you know, the whole assembly in the gym, but we found ways to have kids on the sidewalks. Some of us did sixth grade recognition. We had it outside. Some of us did drive-throughs where the sixth graders would come to the drive-through lane and we'd honk and wave and scream their names and the next car would come through. We just learned how to do activities that didn't allow for lots of groups gathering, right? Some people hosted barbecues and things, and they were all outside because the springtime was beautiful weather. So we really ended the year without masks on. The one thing I do want to talk about, because I think it's important, is that when we were in shutdown, you know, everybody, when you go back to that March of 2020, nobody had masks. No one knew what those were. People were making them out of, you know, material, and, you know, the Hobby Lobbies of the world were out of material because everybody was making them. And there were all these online tutorials about how do you make masks out of old t-shirts? How do you make masks? And so we were so, you know, as you know, you wore a mask. It was hard in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then to teach in one all day long. So we had all kinds of tricks. Some teachers had like these face masks that were plastic that you put underneath your mask and would take the mask away from your mouth so that they could breathe. Some of them had masks they prefer. Some of us preferred paper over cloth. Some masks, you know, we kind of got creative and they would do holiday masks. But kids were great about wearing masks. And really, every day they would come to the building with a new mask on and be excited to be there. And although the masks weren't super fun and it was hard not to see kids' smiles, it felt good to be with them. You know, we mm-hmm. had spent so much time apart that it was worth wearing a mask in order to have them in our buildings and have them in our care. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes, yes it does.
But that's kind of what it looked like.
So when kids would lose their masks, so that, that was probably a normal state of affairs. Every 5 seconds or something, the school district had plenty of masks on hand.
Oh,
so
man.
How did they, so with the shortage to start with, how did they get a supply of them? Or did were there volunteers out in the community that made them? And,
both.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, the school district was really on, I'm not sure how, but our purchasing department really purchased a bunch of masks before we knew it was going to be a thing. And I know that sounds crazy, but we did not really have a problem with hand sanitizer or masks. We had a lot. Kids, it was so interesting. You know, grandmas, we had a grandma in one of our classrooms that would supply the entire grade level with masks they made. Every month we had, you know, people order them off the internet. Kids would forget, you know, every once in a while a kid would get out of a car and they go, ah! We'd say, it's okay, you know, get your mask. sometimes they lost them during the day or things happened to them, you know. They'd be eating lunch and spill something on it or whatever. But we had a business partner would send in like a huge bag of masks. And so we just had them in the front entryway, just kind of like it was normal everyday thing. And if a kid came in with that one, we'd just grab one and say, hey, pick, you know, pick one out of the bag. And they'd pick it, you know, whatever color they liked and put it on. We'd say, okay, have a great day. And they'd say, okay. And so it just was one of those things where really kids were better than us adults. Us adults always complained about it. Like I'd find myself going outside, taking it off, breathing for a little bit, putting it back on. Adults were allowed to take them off if you were in your own space, you're in an office by yourself, something like that. You were allowed to take it off. And so, you know, I found myself in my office a few times taking it off and breathing and then putting it back on. And definitely, you know, they were little kids and they were getting used to it too. And so we talked a lot when they first came back to school about if you need a mask break, just let someone know. We'll let you go to the back of the classroom where you're away from everyone and take off. And really, kids didn't need that. They, like I said, they were better than the adults were sometimes. We just took our cues from them. They were awesome.
And so what about kids that they maybe have a little voice?
Oh,
how did that work with a mask?
Kids with little voices. So, you know, sometimes I did find myself a lot saying, what? Now tell me that again. Now what? And I'd get really close, like, okay, what? Because it's so hard. You want kids to know that you care about them. You don't say what every 5 seconds,
sure.
Right? So we would just try really hard to listen. And, you know, you can't watch their mouth move either. So we would just really try to hear what they were saying. And then a lot of those kids were like, you know, they learned to speak up so you could hear them, or it just took a second for you to figure it out and then you knew what they said. But those little kids that don't talk very loud, they kind of found their voices, you know?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It really is great. And what about kids that are maybe had somewhat of a speech impediment or something like that? How did that go?
Yeah, I don't ever remember thinking anything different.
Okay.
I mean, kids just, you know, kids had tricks too. I think the real trick that we found, and I think parents found it, was that, you know, everyone has the mask that kind of works for them. And so you would see, like, you know, a kid have this mask in like nine different colors, you know, or you see kids change masks midday. Or you would see, you know, this mask comes down this way, and this mask is, you know, up closer to their eye. Excuse me. Or this kid's using disposable masks. It's kind of like everyone kind of found their what worked best for them. And then really that was the piece that was probably the greatest. I mean, kids just had all these different masks, and they would comment on each other's. If they said something funny or had a picture that was funny, kids would be like, oh, that mask is cool. I mean, it's amazing how you, when I look back on it, I think we're trying to make the best of it. You know, if you're going to wear them, let's have them be fun.
Oh, sure.
You know, kids would, kids' names were on them. That was really helpful, because when you just see their eyes, sometimes it's hard to tell who they were. And so, you know, but kids would have I just can't tell you, like, all decorations on them. That was probably one of the fun parts, was getting back to school and looking at all the different creative masks. You know, someone's grandma made them, or someone's aunt was making them, or Like I said, kids had little tricks. Some kids wore them on lanyards so they wouldn't lose them, and they'd put them on after they were done eating. Some used them as napkins, and so we just kind of, you know, it just was kind of whatever worked. We just found a groove with the masks.
And what about kids that were maybe a little bit claustrophobic?
You know, so one thing I didn't talk about was online academy. And so kind of out of this really hard place in the spring, right? We were just kind of trying to get through that first spring, like I told you about, March to May. We really didn't know. We had never taught online. We had never run Zoom meetings and Google Meets. We were really getting our groove when school came back in session. I mean, we were learning. Those teachers had planned so much, and those kids were so ready to get back into school and have something to do because, you know, we'd all kind of been at home. So out of this, not everyone felt comfortable sending their kids to in-person school. So kind of out of this pandemic really built and grew, kind of was born this idea of online academy, which we still have. And it is a kind of another school in our district that basically anyone who does not feel comfortable coming back in person could do school online, meaning they just continued. They didn't ever come back to school or go back home. They stayed online. That was their plan from the beginning. So anyone who didn't feel maybe comfortable probably went to online academy. I don't remember talking to anybody about being claustrophobic or feeling weird about the masks. I mean, most kids were just like, oh my gosh, yeah, let's get it on, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, unfortunately, I think that whatever it was, you know, I mean, we're living in this really weird time when everyone around them is wearing a mask. They just put one on too. You know, they mm-hmm. go to the grocery store and everyone has them on. They're at, you know, a dining location, everyone has them on. You know, people are wearing them on the streets. People, you know, they're just seeing all this stuff. And so it's not really any different. They just kind of put them on. So I don't remember knowing anything about anybody having trouble wearing the mask. And if they did, and if they thought they were going to have worries or that it would be too much for them, they could always join the online academy. We had lots of kids in online academy. And so that was fun too.
And so is that hard? Of course, kids are smart when it comes to computer stuff. So was it difficult for them to learn how to access that, or how did that go?
No. Actually, you know, kids are better than adults. They were awesome. Kids would say, click here, click here. I know at home when we were in shutdown, I have a couple of kids, and I was trying to get into these meetings so I could see kids and, you know, see my own. They'd send you the code and you'd try to get in. I couldn't find it, you know, and my own kid's like, okay, click here, you know, click here. I mean, kids knew. They knew all the ins and outs of these things and how to work them, and they're not scared to touch all the buttons. So no, I don't remember. I mean, sharing the screen, that seemed to be a real issue. Sometimes you'd be like, okay, click here so we can share your screen, so we can see what's going on your screen. Probably the hardest part was just giving kids oral directions to try to find. So when we would give them programs to log into, you know, here's your login information, excuse me, and then when they'd have trouble trying to troubleshoot, that was probably one of the biggest issues we had, was just trying to troubleshoot when you're on this side of the computer and they're on the other. Trying to figure out, okay, click here. Okay, quick, click there, you know, and just things like that where some could be hard. But most kids did really well. I mean, kids were just, like I said, they're used to, those are their computers.
So what about the parent factor? I mean, how did that work in terms of the parents making the kids stay on task and all that kind of stuff?
So in different grades, it looked different, right? When you have a little kindergartner who's 5 years old, they probably need a parent in the same room to kind of make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Some of our older kids, right around, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade, they really didn't need anybody in the room, you know, making sure they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. You know, the teacher's right there. So if anyone's, you know, having trouble, or if they're not there, they just yell, so-and-so, come back, and the kid would come back, you know. But really, parents were so supportive. If you had an issue or you needed them to problem solve, a lot of times you'd see a parent come onto the screen, you know, they'd say, we can't hear you, but you can hear us, and we'd shake our heads. And so really it became normal to see parents helping. Parents sitting, you could see parents working in the background. We saw lots of that. You know, parents have headphones on and they're doing their work, kids doing their school. Parents jumping onto the screen saying, hey, we tried this and we're trying that, you know, just being right there with us all the time, trying to help us teach their kids. It was amazing. It was a great partnership. But it wasn't anything out of the blue to see a parent pop into your, you know, pop into the meeting because they're trying to help their kid, their mouse is gone, you know, just all those little things happen.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, parents just jump on you like, hi, Mrs., you know, and it's just part of what we were doing.
So what about kids that maybe are a little bit slow learners? How was that addressed?
So, you know, the online environment really allowed kids at their own pace. So if this assignment, you know, let's say the teacher says, okay, everyone, we're going to work on, you know, a writing activity. We're going to write a story. And everyone's going to write a story. And if you want to turn off your computer, you can turn off your, or if you want to turn off your screen, you can turn off your screen. You want to write, you know, in your bedroom where it's nice and quiet, you know, you write your story, hop back on in 20 minutes. But if you want me to help you or you need help with your spelling something, stay on here. But you can go if you want. And so a lot of times kids would just stay on and they'd say, I need help. You know, can you help me with this? Or I don't understand the math you taught today. And so teachers just had like these little sessions that they'd just be on there. And then you'd just see a kid pop up and they'd say, hey, Mrs. So-and-so. And teachers say, hey. And they'd say, I was trying to work on the math. I don't understand number 14. Can you go over it with me? And they'd say, sure, sure. And so it just kind of was just natural. You know, kids knew their teachers were on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a great feeling.
Oh, sure. And so do you think it was actually better in a way because it was more one-on-one than there would normally be in a school day?
Or? Well, I don't know about that. I think that there's so much more we can do when you're in person.
Mm-hmm.
And so do I believe that... I think for some kids, they do great in both places. But do I think that in-person school is not for all kids? So I wouldn't say that, but is the best way for most kids to learn? I do. That interaction, human interaction, cannot be replaced. And I think that is what virtual school, and just really not virtual school, the pandemic taught us. People were lonely. You know, people got pets because they were lonely, and we are humans. We crave human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that in-person school for most of the kids that I know is really maybe probably one of the best things that we can do for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I don't know that I would say we should do online school. I don't think that. As a principal, you know, there's just so much more I can do in person. And mm-hmm. when the kid doesn't understand something, I can get on their level. I can look in their eyes and say, okay, if you know that 4 times 4 is 16, what do we know about 4 times 5? And if they don't know it, then I can draw a picture. I can pull out manipulatives. I can say, hold on a minute, and grab something I need and come back and help them understand that concept. I think sometimes we can't do that online. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can't see what their wheels that are turning
yeah.
when I'm talking about something when there's 20 of them on the screen. When there's 20 kids in me in my room and I'm looking around and I'm seeing that you're not getting it and oh, nope, okay, I got it. Then I have to rethink what I'm doing. I think online did not allow for us to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to teach and then you're trying to look at these little boxes and make sure everyone understands it. And I just think that human interaction piece, we just have to see their faces and hear their voices in person to say, okay, you either understand this or you don't. And if you don't, then I have to do something different. Let me see what I have here. How can I do to help you?
And so what about kids that were, the smart kids, were they able to still maintain their grade point average? And did that work? Or like Blake told me that whatever anybody had when, I think it was when it started, when it all started, that's the grade they got at the end of the thing, because he wasn't going to mess around with kids' grades because of all the changes and everything.
Yeah, so in elementary school, we don't really give grades.
Oh, okay.
We don't give A, B, C, D, and E, or F, and so we don't give grades. We have a mastery system, and so we just took, you know, assessments the way we always did. If we were going to do something, we tried our best, and so... ours is more about progress, you know, long-term reading and math and writing, but we just don't take grades. Okay. So I'm not, I know there was a, I know that, you know, high school looks different because you're, your transcripts and things, but in elementary school, we don't take grades. Okay. So we just try our best with every kid.
Okay. And then there's certain, were there like map tests and things like that the kids had to take? So how did that work?
Yes. So there were some assessments that kids were taking at home, and that proved to be really interesting because that's probably some of the most challenging things we had is that you've asked these kids to get on this website and take this assessment and you can't see it. And the kids are like, oh, well, what's this word mean? Or what's this word say? You know, and you're like, I can't see it. You know, so, or the test just kicked me out. You know, all those things that you can't see that we were trying to troubleshoot was all really interesting. So we did take the MAP test this spring. And if you were in person, you just took it in person like normal. If you were an online Academy student, you actually came to one of our middle schools on a day they were out on Wednesday. Those kids came into our middle school, and we still gave that test in person. So, yeah, we still gave those in-person tests.
So who came up with the moniker Online Academy? I like that term.
Oh, right. I think it was just, just a collection of people that got together and came up with this name, Online Academy. And we're actually, you know, continuing it. So we'll have some families that maybe, you know, may not feel comfortable coming back yet, and we want to honor that. I think also we might have kids that just do better learning at home, or maybe they were a homeschool student. Now they can do it at home with a teacher. They might choose to log on to our online academy. So yeah, we're really excited about it.
Yeah, I think it sounds prestigious.
Yeah, that's, I love it. Well, that's even better.
It really does. Yeah,
I like prestigious.
Yeah. So you were a principal,
I was.
And now you're over here in this building.
Yep.
Tell me about how that happened, and was this always your goal to come over here and be in this position?
So I am really passionate about little kids, and I'm passionate about kids in general, but where I love to do my work is with elementary age kids. And so, yes, this role has been really a dream for a long time for me. And I think that I'm super excited to be, you know, kind of embarking on this adventure. But it really, for me, this position is about supporting schools and supporting our kids and our teachers. And I think it's about coming out of a pandemic stronger than we before. A lot of things were, as you know, put on hold. In the world, things were put on hold. And I think we are in a place that I couldn't be more excited about leading. Because we're in a place that everyone, we're done with that. We may not be.
Yeah.
But we want to be done with that. And so I think everyone is kind of in the same place where everybody's like, we want to be done with that. We are all ready to just move forward and try new things and take what we learned from living through a pandemic and apply that. You know, there were some things that, I'm trying to think of something we were talking about the other day. We talked about a couple of things that we've learned in the pandemic. We're like, man, what? Oh, I know. We were talking about things we never want to go back to, right? And so one thing I never want to go back to is this idea of ordering my food at the grocery store. You know, like, I don't ever want to take that away. Like, I love that. That was something that came out of the pandemic that was awesome. Something else that came out of the pandemic is we really, our food service department here in the district was so absolutely creative, and they did great things for kids. They were sending buses out with food on them, go to bus stops, kids could pick up lunches. When we were shut down, they had back snacks. They had a high school cafeteria where they were assembling all these lunches. You could drive up and get the lunches for the week. They did amazing things for kids. But one thing we did in the building that changed was we used to have breakfast down by our cafeteria, and you just, you know, pick it up and go. And so something that we started doing that seems so silly that you're like, oh my gosh, why would we not have done that in the past? Was we had like multiple breakfast stations because we didn't want kids coming together in large groups, right? So sometimes the breakfast would get a little out of hand. And so we wanted to make sure that kids had different access points for breakfast. But it turned out wonderful because it was so like kids would come in, grab their breakfast and go to their classrooms. So that's something we don't want to ever go back. We don't want to not go back to that. I mean, that was amazing. Something else I think we learned from living it through a pandemic is hand washing. You know, I like to say, like, were we not hand washing? You know, I mean, we all were, right? But we got a lot better at it during the pandemic. And that's probably something we want to really continue in schools. We see a lot less sickness when we're all washing our hands, you know, and everything's a little cleaner. I was trying to think, there were just some other pieces that we've talked about. You know, living in a pandemic, you learn to be more adaptable and flexible. And those aren't bad skills for anyone. And so if we can continue to help our kids be flexible, and I think that, you know, one thing we learned was that we felt really, educators in general, felt really responsible for kids. Just that, you know, we love you, and we have not forgotten about you, and we're thinking about you every single day. And I think that's something that we can walk away and say, we want kids, we felt like that anyway, but during a pandemic, you're really intentional about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to make sure those words that you hadn't said, you say. And so now we're so open about that. I mean, at the end of the year, it was just like, you know, everyone was crying, but it's just like we lived through this together. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you know, we want to make sure that you say those things. We care about you, and you're part of this, and you're important to us. And things that they maybe knew and they felt, but maybe we didn't say every day. Mm-hmm. And so now I just think we're just more intentional. That's something I definitely think we've come out of the pandemic stronger with.
So what, I know it's kind of hard, you've given me a lot of wonderful material, but in the summation, I mean, what do you think overall? I mean, what would you have not done, and what would you change? I mean, what would be some of those things?
Well, one thing I wish was that we had just never gone through it. So I don't know if that's what you're looking for. But something I would change... Well, I think that summer gave us a really great time to regroup. I think that summer gave teachers a time to recharge and really get to a point where they were like, in the back of their mind, you know, they're doing summer stuff and, you know, sitting outside their houses and stuff because, you know, we all stayed home, right? But in the back of their mind, they've got this school like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do this. Because we came back super strong in August. We were ready. We were like, we're going to teach online, and it's going to be amazing. We're going to do it different. And I would probably say the thing I would change would be, I wish we would have that time to make March, April, and May as amazing as I know the fall and the winter was. Because we just, not that we weren't prepared. I don't know that anyone's ever prepared for that. But we just had never taught like that. And so I just wish we wouldn't have been just trying to figure it out. You know, I wish we would have had that ready. But I also believe that the struggle helped us come back so much stronger in August.
So do you think that that the school district has kept that template that they developed and it's on the ready to pull
out
in case they
totally. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some things we learned how to use programs and technology. I mean, I would tell you there is no teacher in this district who is not an expert on technology. I mean, those teachers can, they're like, oh yeah, click on that and click on that and click, oh yeah, we're going to make this 3D, you know, graph. And you're like, whoa, because a few years ago, we wouldn't have been making that just because, you know, we didn't need to. And so, man, teachers they're just technology gurus at this point. I mean, I was telling our Board of Education has approved a plan for us to get these new smart panels. And teachers are going to have new devices. And it's this great plan. And they're like, do you think they're ready? I'm like, are they ready? They are thrilled. And they are so ready. Pre-pandemic, I don't know that we would have been fine. Mm-hmm. But after the pandemic, these people know how to use that technology to help them teach kids. They're so ready. And they were glad to hear that. They're like, oh, we're so glad to hear that. But it's like, we changed so much so fast, you know? I mean, we just put our curriculum online and started teaching things through a computer. It really, I hope that years from now, when people listen to this or whatever, they think, wow, it sounds crazy. And sometimes I think it kind of was. Sometimes I think, man, we're just kind of doing it, you know? Just kind of making it work.
Well, thank you very much for your time today. It was a fantastic interview.
Thank you.
You take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.